Hello, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada, and the date today is
13th of December, 2021.
All of us are on the same day?
All of us are on the same day.
This is truly exceptional. For all three of us, it is Monday, December the 13th, and for me, it is currently 7:30 in the morning. What time is it for you, Karen?
10:30 in the evening.
And you know, Karen is not going to be able to sleep tonight because she's had this thing going on in her head all day. And in order for Karen to get a good night's sleep, we've just got to get this discussion out. Right, Karen?
That's right, John.
So what's happening anyway?
So a couple of days ago, there was this interesting tweet by Brian Schmidt, who's the Vice Chancellor of Australian National University and a Nobel Prize winner in physics, but he's also a US citizen. And he's just discovered that the US wants to tax his superannuation.
No.
So he tweets and gets an immediate, well, he tweets to the Australian ambassador to the United States and gets an immediate reply. So proving, of course, that it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? But what's interesting then is how everybody chimes in. Everybody who's watching these topics on Twitter chimes in with their own particular circumstances. If it's not super, it's their Canadian retirement savings or their UK this account or German that account. And they're all, all these little minutia, and you kind of get lost as to what's the real problem here. So, John, what's the real problem here? Why is this a problem for everybody?
Well, as I'm sure that Laura, if you want to chime in, why is this a problem for everybody?
This is a problem because the United States considers U.S. citizens who live outside the United States to be tax residents, to remain tax residents of the United States, even though they're also tax residents of the places where they live. And so they have to live under two different tax codes, which is pretty much impossible.
Right, yeah, and you wrote an article on that. Did you not call the criminalization of the American immigrant?
Yeah, I wrote basically two articles that look at that, the criminalization of the American immigrant and another one called Taxing the American Immigrant.
And in both cases, as I understand your articles, you were very much focusing on the fact that taxing them outside the country is bad enough, but really it's a far more punitive kind of taxation than American residents are subject to, right? Because all of what?
Well, there are several aspects in those articles. One is, yes, it's far more punitive because of problems with your retirement plans, because of problems with your investments, because of problems with your real estate, because of problems with your basically non-earned income.
And the problems with all of these things happen because if you live out of the United States, your retirement accounts, your savings, et cetera, is all out of the United States. And the U.S. tax code's treating it as foreign, even though the bank is just down the street from you.
It's unbelievable. You know, you see the word foreign in the Internal Revenue Code, and you know, you read on, you may not understand much of it except the $10,000 penalty. Anything that's foreign starts with a $10,000 penalty, right?
And that goes up very quickly. There was just someone the other day who said in connection with their Australian superannuation, they had a penalty of $120,000. It was $110,000 or $120,000. It was, multiple $10,000.
Trying to minimize it. Thanks for the reality check. Well, Karen, does the United States basically is very distrustful of anything foreign?
Pretty much. So really what we need to do is have some way of allowing people to be tax residents of one country only. And you had a proposal here, John.
Yes, absolutely. I have a proposal on this, and I put this in the context of, we're dealing with all these changes to international tax rules, many of them at the request of the United States. And we have Pillar One, which is basically developing countries saying, oh, hey, we want the right to tax, some of the income of multinationals, which the U.S. has agreed to. We have Pillar Two. Now, this is really interesting because in Pillar Two, the United States is out trying to get the rest of the world to you know, raise their corporate tax rates. But while we're on the subject of international tax, I mean, you know, as Karen points out, you know, people really should be able to be a tax resident of only one country. And ultimately, I would suggest a Pillar Three, which is exactly right, that individuals, you know, should be considered to be at any one time a tax resident of one and only one country. Now, it may be that the United States would find that objectionable because, I mean, well, shouldn't a U.S. citizen always be a tax resident of the United States? I mean, there are some people who actually believe that. But here's the thing. There is a way to solve this internationally through treaty amendments that will work for all treaty countries all the time. No exceptions, no carve-outs, single tax residency for all. And
so John, explain to me how a non-US citizen makes sure that they are a tax resident of one country and only one country.
Right. Well, I mean, the easiest way is if you're neither a green card holder or a US citizen, then you're a tax resident of only one country. But let's assume for a moment that we have a green card.
But say you could, under the rules of both, say, Germany and Canada, be a tax resident of that, of both countries, because you split your time between the two.
Okay, sure. All right. So, we can use Germany and Canada. Why don't we use Germany and the United States, since we're talking about America. But the point is this, that for all these treaties, what they say in a nutshell, whether it's Germany, Canada, Germany, the United States, is, oh my God, if we have a person who is actually a tax resident of both countries at the same time, meaning subject to the full force of both countries' tax rules, we can't have this going on. It is so manifestly unjust and unfair. So we have a provision in the tax treaty that says, all right, generally it's Article 4, look at this, tax resident of both these countries, now we have a series of rules to allocate you to being a tax resident of one country and not the other country. And usually the way these treaties work is based on where you have a permanent home available to you. So for example, you know, let's use Germany, Canada, or whatever. If a person has a permanent home in Germany, but not in Canada, and is still a tax resident of Canada, then the treaty itself would say, all right, we two countries, Germany and Canada, agree that under these circumstances, this individual, because of the treaty, will be a tax resident of Germany only because of the permanent home.
Okay, so why doesn't that provision in a treaty with the U.S. help U.S. citizens?
Well, again, for a very simple reason. The United States includes in all of its treaties something called the saving clause. Now, what the saving clause is a provision that says, well, you know, this treaty is great, and yeah, it means what it says, but here's who it does not apply to, who can't have the benefits of it. And the answer is, if you're a U.S. citizen, no, you can't have the benefits of a tax treaty. Absolutely not. Why should you have any benefits? You're a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. But because of the outrageousness of the claim, there are actually exceptions to the saving clause, where the saving clause doesn't apply. In other words, even a lowly U.S. citizen should have a benefit of a tax treaty. And these include various things, depending on the treaties, but often they include the double taxation problem, et cetera. But what is significant, Karen, is that under no existing treaty is there a savings clause exception to the Article 4 treaty tiebreaker provisions.
Okay. So let's go step back just a minute. What's the real problem of allowing someone to be a tax resident in two countries at once?
Oh my God, as Laura points out, they are subject to the full force of the tax laws in both countries at the same time. And if one of them is the US, that means that the US actually imposes taxation on all kinds of things that are generally not taxable in the other country. You know, there are not many problems with this.
So essentially what you're saying is that for U.S. citizens who can't use a residence tiebreaker, the U.S. is stepping into that other country where their U.S. citizen lives and undoing their domestic taxation policy that might incentivize certain types of savings, etc., by taxing that income, right? It's they're reaching into the other country and pulling, siphoning money out of that economy by taxing U.S. citizens. So,
Karen, why don't you just simply call it theft?
I think the principle that many countries, I think most countries should be able to get behind is that if somebody is a tax resident of our country, the U.S. should not be able to tax locally sourced income. For example, for an Australian resident, the U.S. should not be able to tax Australian source income. For a Canadian resident, the U.S. should not be able to tax Canadian source income. So if we were to put an exception in the savings clause that says that U.S. citizens can use that residence tiebreaker, would that fix it?
You know, Karen, I think it would absolutely fix it for all countries, all situations, all the time. Of course, for the U.S. to move to residency, pure residency-based taxation would also fix it for all people, all circumstances, all the time.
That would even be better because not every country has a treaty with the U.S.
Well, that would be better. That would be better. But the thing is this, as you know, because you set up the Fix the Tax Treaty site, which is an admission that, you know, other countries can't tell the U.S. how to run their tax policies. But they certainly can decide what kinds of treaties to enter into. And I think that
they can protect their own sovereign rights
to protect their rights, their sovereign rights as a country. Because as you point out, and we've had a lot of discussion on this, you know, the U.S. through their citizenship taxation system actually forces its way into other countries and steals source income from those other countries that belongs to those countries. I mean, there's an endless example. Some of them include the net investment income tax, the PPIC provisions, GILTI, transition tax, subpart F, exit tax, taxation on the gains of sales of principal. It goes on and on. Mm-hmm. It goes on and on. So to end this ability under treaty of the United States to do this will allow individuals who just happen to have been born in the United States to be subject to only one tax system and do their retirement and tax planning under that system. It will allow those countries to run their economic policy without fear of it being interfered with through United States tax policy. It will allow the United States to even keep its corrupt, depraved, antiquated, almost medieval system of citizenship taxation, which assumes ownership of the individual rather than citizenship as sort of a political status. In other words, the United States can continue to abuse people, but not if they're tax residents of other countries who have a treaty with the United States. And again, I emphasize why I think this is important, why I think it's doable, and why the world needs to get behind this is, first of all, right now we're talking about changes in international tax. We have Pillar One, we have Pillar Two. Even the Trump trade negotiator, Robert Lighthizer, in June of 2020, when he pulled the United States out of the OECD talks, at least temporarily, made a very interesting statement. And what he said was, whether by accident or design, he said, the time has come to rethink the rules of international tax, including who is taxed. And there was nothing in that precluded individuals. And I believe that, you know, at the end of the day, it's individuals who matter. And the time has come as part of the renegotiation of international tax rules to include a principle, which I would suggest should be called Pillar Three, since people are talking about Pillar One, Pillar Two. We call this Pillar Three. The principle being that individuals under international tax rules are a tax resident of only one country at a time. And this could be done through a multilateral instrument and or at the same time, tax treaties that individual countries have with the United States absolutely need to be amended or interpreted to allow the tax treaty tie break provision to allocate residency only to the country people live in, even if they are a U.S. citizen. All that requires is simply adding the Article 4 tiebreaker provision to one of the exceptions of to the savings clause. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So basically what you're saying is, we acknowledge that the other countries can't tell the U.S. how to run their taxes.
Absolutely. I would add to that, the U.S. can't be telling other countries how to run their tax system either.
That's right. And the U.S. can't reach into the economy, should not be able to reach into the economies of other countries.
Yeah, they shouldn't be allowed to steal. Exactly.
Right. So your proposal then is to get countries behind a move internationally, and the more countries that are behind this, the more likely it is to happen, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but a move to amend the savings clause in U.S. treaties to include the Article 4 residence tiebreaker as one of the provisions that U.S. citizens can use.
Exactly.
And on top of that, you're saying icing on the cake would be a multilateral agreement on the tax residency of individuals, basically stating the principle that individuals should be able to be tax resident in one country at a time.
Exactly. And this, I think, is very important. The last point is very, very important in this world where information exchange is now such a big issue, right? If you look at the two provisions, FATCA and the CRS, well, they're very, very different, okay? Very, very different. Anybody who claims they're the same obviously doesn't understand them, okay? The fundamental difference is this, that under FATCA, the United States is demanding information about people who do not live in the United States and are tax residents of that other country. Under CRS, countries are asking for information about people who do not live in the requested countries, but are tax residents of the first country. So what FATCA does—
The bigger difference, I think, is that under CRS, countries are agreeing to share information.
Well, yeah, that's a part too. They're agreeing to share. And of course, under FATCA, you and I both know there's no sharing at all. Okay, it's just a one-way, information grab. But to not stray too far from the main point here, this is a principle, the principle of single tax residency in a global world absolutely has to be adopted. And I think that we at SEAT should begin calling it a proposed Pillar 3. Everybody agree to call it a proposed Pillar 3 and roll this out. This could be achieved, I think it should be achieved, frankly, through a CRS type of multilateral agreement. Okay, that would be the gold standard, but it doesn't have to be. It can also be achieved by amending the savings clause of existing treaties to simply allow the Article 4 tax treaty tiebreak as an exception to that. Now, I would add, the reason that this will work is because the way these treaties are written is it's a mandatory deeming provision. In other words, step one, tax resident of both countries. Step two, permanent home in one country. The language of the treaty is shall be a tax resident of only one country. And that's why I think that's a very elegant way to do this. And I think it's a way that avoids the clutter, if you will, that avoids the confusion. When everybody jumps in and starts talking about the individual problems they have in their country, that's all true. But, it's more of the divide and conquer principle. Well, we'll address this, but not that. For example, Rev Proc 2017, right, was an attempt to address some things, but not another in terms of reporting. Let's bypass all that crap, okay? The way to do it is to put that exception into the savings clause, which then means that a mandatory residency provision pops up, which specifically means that people who are tax residents of a country with a permanent home only in that country, and or if you get beyond that, other considerations, shall be a tax resident of only that country. And that way, the individual, the gentleman on Twitter wouldn't have the problem that he's having today.
Yeah, I think it's also important that when this is being negotiated, the memorandum of understanding or the technical explanation makes clear that this is aimed at making sure that U.S. citizens can be taxed by one country and one country alone.
Oh, absolutely. Or to put it another way, that they're treated in the same way that green card holders are treated, basically.
Yeah. It
would perhaps be a way of softening the blow. But, you know, Karen, the bottom line is simply this, that this situation has to change, is completely intolerable. Not only is it forcing people to renounce their citizenship, but as Laura points out, you know, it's actually criminalizing people for, you know, behavior, the inability to comply with laws that are on the books. As, you know, as you point out time and time again, Karen, you know, it's a way of literally expanding the U.S. tax base into other countries and using it to siphon out revenue.
John, if I recall correctly, the person that made this original post on Twitter made a comment later about how it means that Americans can't work in Australia. And I think actually that's a reflection of the much larger problem, which is Americans can't really live in other countries unless they want to live basically.
That's right. I mean, you know, the thing about, you know, Laura, you and Karen, you know, put things so nicely and theoretically, okay? I mean, I think if we were to, you know, cut to the chase, what is the truth? The truth is the United States has become a fiscal prison and taxation is the warden.
Not much to disagree with there, John.
But silence.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Laura makes that point in her article, you know, better than anybody, right? I mean, it's one thing for me to say it, but, you know, Laura explains it in her article. It's absolutely true. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, we're talking about how to solve this problem, you know, externally, you know, from an international perspective with the proposal of, say, a Pillar 3. You know, let's not lose sight of the fact that this needs to be solved internally. As well, you know, the United States has got to end this ridiculous citizenship taxation stuff and move to residency-based taxation and a pure form of residency-based taxation where citizenship cannot be used, you know, to make somebody a tax resident of a country. And this is, and this is why, I mean, individual Americans abroad have really, really got to come together to support this principle and stop, you know, supporting these, you know, these ridiculous, silly carve-outs that divide and conquer and, you know, allow a certain number of people at a certain time in their life, you know, to get relief and hanging everybody else out to dry, right?
Pure RBT is really the best solution from an internal to the US perspective.
Absolutely. Pure RBT, no left-outs, no carve-outs.
No ongoing reporting requirements.
No reporting requirements. Done. You're just not, you know, you don't live there. You got nothing to do with a place. Why do you have anything to do with the tax system?
Yep.
I mean, you know, even a five-year-old in the sandbox would understand that.
Yeah.
But it would also address a problem of, well, you know, there are Americans who live in countries that don't have a tax treaty with the U.S.
Well, right. Clearly. Pressure has to continue to be brought, and hat tip to Republicans overseas who has adopted, okay, the goal of pure residency-based taxation, which we at SEAT have, you know, began to articulate about a year ago. Even the phrase pure residency-based taxation, I think, you know, originated, I think, in our discussion. So I'm glad to see that it's being rolled out. But that is what is the ultimate solution here. But remember that internal tax laws can change, they could change back. So this needs to be reinforced by an international understanding of Pillar 3, that people can be tax residents of one and only one country at a time.
Yep. It's nice and simple.
I have a long day ahead of me now. I feel like I just had a morning workout or something. You know, some days I get up and I do an exercise bicycle, 30 minutes. This morning, 30 minutes with Laura and Karen, I feel like I've had the same level of exercise. I don't know if that means that maybe I should be using a harder cycling program or getting less excited on these calls. I'm not sure which.
Okay. Well, thank you, John.
Okay. Well, thanks for the workout this morning, and we'll certainly reconvene later.
Sounds good.